time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Hero.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Egghead Jeopardy contestant.
Mr. Egghead Jeopardy contestant.
You, sir, are imbued with the God-given gift to respond to questions that are actually answers with answers that are actually questions.
And you get every single one right.
Yes, you've accumulated a vast fortune, Mr. Egghead Jeopardy contestant, with a head full of knowledge and a fistful of buzzer.
You've made more money than Merv.
And you're a whole lot funnier than Alex.
But that's not really saying much.
I'll say. So the next time you think you're smart enough to be on that show, plop your brains on the couch and drop your jaw in salute to Mr. Egghead Jeopardy contestant, a real American hero.
Mr. Egghead Jeopardy contestant.
Sorry, form of a question, please.
Get ready for the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for Sam and Kara in the morning. Give Sam and Kara a call at 323-203-0815. And now, here are your hosts, Sam and Kara.
And good morning and welcome to Wednesday, August 4th. We're in the studio, as usual, on a weekday. We try to be here every day, provide you with entertainment, news.
Groundbreaking news! It's more like groundbreaking news.
All the news music. That makes no difference to anybody.
Groundbreaking news music. Pretty much, right? What do you say, Sam?
Yeah, I would say. Good morning to you, Kara.
Good morning, Sam. I like how your shirt really brings out the gray in your hair. It looks nice.
Yeah, you like it. I always get compliments for the shirt. I don't know why.
Well, you know, there's something about men that are tan with gray hair. It looks good. It looks kind of glowy.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Oh, cool.
It looks
so. I'll take that as a compliment.
It is. It's like your coloring is kind of warm and and tan, and then you have really kind of you've got real gray silver hair.
Silver hair.
Silver. Let's get it. Sterling silver hair. Sterling silver. Only the best for Sam. But it makes it look kind of glowy.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So you should
it.
Wear colors like light blues. Mm-hmm. Grays are nice. Not muted grays, but kind of, you know, sparkly gray.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Get your glitter gray.
Let me write it all down so
get
I don't forget.
Get glitter gray on. You know, just, you know, like kind of those nicer, lighter tones.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Well, I wear all kinds of colors, but I happen to like black a lot. I just sometimes wear it too much.
Well, I mean, black is just easy, and it just seems like it's like when you buy stuff, it's easy to do black because, you know, it can go with anything, and there are accessory pieces and da-da-da, but, you know, you got to break out once in a while.
That's true. That's true.
I think black is, what is it, the absence of color, or it's like all the colors together?
Black is, let me think. Well, it depends what color scheme you use. I mean, there's RGB, which is called
RGBIV.
Additive. In other words, if you add all the colors, you get black. And then there's CMYK, where you add all of them, you get white. So it's pretty interesting stuff.
What? How did you know that?
Because I used to be in computer graphics, so I understand that stuff.
He's just a little computer nerd. He got all like into it. He's like, actually, depends on the database you're using. But I thought that black was just all the colors combined, blah, black. And then white is absence of color.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I think black looks good on everybody. You're wearing black today. It looks good.
I've got bright yellow underneath it.
Oh, you do?
Mm-hmm. Mm. See, yellow.
Nice cleavage.
Shut up.
I get an eyeful every morning.
Whatever. Not every morning. I've toned it down.
Not every morning.
I've toned it down.
Yeah. So you're awake this morning, which is good.
Yeah.
Considering you probably stayed up late last night, didn't you?
I probably went to bed around midnight.
Okay. That's not too bad.
That's not too bad. No. I'm not really like, the thing is they call me grandma because I just, you know, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock hits. It doesn't matter if I've had a drink or not. I just feel drunk.
Mm.
I'm usually like, hey,
Even if you haven't had a drink, huh?
Yeah, it's not like a drunk feeling, but it's a tired.
Just tired,
it's
yeah.
It's just kind of like tired. My head bobs around. I drool, whatever.
I know what it feels like, yeah.
It's not pretty, my point is.
Yeah.
So I just come straight home, and I head right for the bed. Sometimes my face gets washed. Sometimes it doesn't. Like last night, it didn't.
Yeah.
And so I went to bed in my clothes.
In your clothes.
Mm-hmm. Just
yet
straight
once
to bed.
Again.
Yeah, it feels
good.
So good, though.
Yeah.
I just unzip the back so that, you know, it's not tight.
Uh-huh.
And everything can breathe a bit. And then I just plop on the bed, and I'm, like, out. And then I woke up, and, like, my fake lashes were, like, kind of, like, half on, half off and sticking me in the eyeball. It's really sexy, though, I'm trying to say.
So is it necessary for you to put fake eyelashes on?
It's not, no. It's just a dramatic effect.
Is it really?
Yeah, like during the day, I usually don't wear them.
Right.
Like right now, I don't really have barely any makeup on, but normally it's not a big deal. But they're just, it's a little more drama.
Yeah.
It's fun doing stuff like that, girly.
Yeah.
You know?
So for those of you who don't know, we went out to a comedy show last night. It was sort of like an anniversary for one of our shows here. And the first thing that struck me is I get there and our name is on the marquee, you know, latalkradio.com. And I thought, wow, you know, this is cool.
Yeah.
You know, so I took some pictures of that.
Yeah.
And so we got there right on time, you know, and it was too early.
Yeah.
It was too early.
Well, I was running so late, and I'd got there, and it hadn't started. I'm like, there's L.A. for you, man.
Yeah.
I just knew I could roll up. I mean, it took me a while to get ready. I was had a lot going on, so.
Yeah, but I know usually comedy shows, if you don't get there on time, you're going to miss out on some of them. So, you know, but this wasn't really a comedy show. It was more like a party.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and they didn't start for an hour. So in the meantime, we were eating and drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And then it finally started. And
they had a great band there. That band was fun.
Was it good? Yeah. I only heard one song that they played.
Yeah, but they were just fun and cute. Kind of that like retro vibe, kind of that 40s look that girl had. And she could sing really well. So it was good. I think they called Flutterbys or something like
that. Is that what their name was?
Something like that.
Yeah,
it was really
cute.
Never
heard of them, yeah. So they had a band there, and but still, they didn't play the first hour, so there wasn't really much going on for the first hour, so you didn't miss much.
Okay.
And you got there when? Like an hour later or something?
Yep. Nice, ripe hour, thinking, I probably missed half the show, but that's cool.
Yeah.
Because,
no,
you know, when you do comedy, too, you don't really like seeing a bunch of comedy. It's interesting. You get a little
I
mean,
I would think you'd get into it because you want to see what other people are doing. And,
You know, I love performing, and there's certain people and there's certain types of comedy that I just love, but there's a lot of bad comedy.
Yeah, there is a lot of
bad. There's a lot of
comedy.
Mediocre comedy. And then there's also just, not that I'm the best at all, but there's also, like, there's trends in comedy, so you get the nerd humor is in, or you get the, you know, I'm an you know, total a-hole kind of comic.
Yeah.
And it just becomes like the trend, so you see so much of it, and it starts to kind of run into each other.
Right.
Like, I went to another show the other night, and it was just kind of the same kind of women were getting up. It was just pissy and bitchy, and it's not even that they're not funny, but when you see the same thing over and over and over, it becomes... Right. You become a little immune to it, I think, is what I'm saying.
I think it's tiring to see one comic after another, you know, especially if they're not doing well.
If they're not serving you up some funny, it takes a lot out of you.
Yeah.
It really does.
It really does. And you got to imagine what it takes out of them, you know. It's not easy.
Well, I think, I know.
You know?
I know. And it's sad when you see somebody kind of bombing a bit. And you know that they're good, but maybe whatever it is, it's just not their night. The audience isn't there, and they're kind of tanking a bit, and you're just like,
Yeah. So the first thing that occurred to me is this venue is too large for what they were trying to do, you know?
Yeah.
And so it looks empty when it's so spread out, you know?
Yeah.
So what I would have done is probably made it more like a, like the Laugh Factory or something, you know, or one of those comedy places where it's small, the tables are close to the stage, and it feels more cozy, you know? So, I mean, it would have taken them hundreds of people to make the place look busy. You know, so it didn't turn out that way.
It's a really pretty venue, though.
Yeah, it is.
I love the
cool
venue. It's I'd never been there.
Yeah,
I'd never even heard of it. Have you?
No, I never heard of it. Busby's.
Busby's is really cool.
Yeah, because I guess it was they used to have the conga room there once.
Oh, really? It's such a cool place.
Supposedly, yeah.
Totally cool place. It was too large, a little ambitious for the people. I mean, I think intimate, especially if it's a party. I think you know, and you're really kind of celebrating your
listeners. Yeah, if it's a party, people are supposed to mingle, and in a large place like that, it's not conducive to that. Everybody sort of like gets a chair or a seat or something, and that's it, you know.
A little too open.
But I got to tell you, what I was surprised about is you came in and we hugged and everything, and then you went and sat all by yourself. And
oh, really?
Yeah, and it kind of like didn't seem right, you know.
Oh, really?
I
mean,
and I asked you to come and sit with us, and
I felt comfortable here. Oh, no,
I would have bought you a drink, I would have bought you something
sweet.
To eat, so you missed out on that.
Oh, good. Well, next time I know, I'll sit
right
next to your wallet.
You know,
it's just the seating was you guys were kind of sitting, it wasn't like an open table, it was against the wall,
right?
And I didn't think I was going to have as good a view, and I thought I'd be talking over Dina and to talk to you. You know what I mean? Like, I thought it would be kind of crowded. Like, I wouldn't get a good vision.
Well, you don't have to talk that much, but you sit together. You know, I mean, it seemed strange that you went and sat by yourself. Yeah.
I thought,
well, maybe she's trying to have someone, you know, walk up to her. And
although that happened, but no.
I'm sure it happened.
Yeah, it does happen. But no, no disrespect. That was a sweet invite. I just was thinking practicality. I was like, oh, I got a good seat right here. That's all.
You got to think people when you go to a party.
Yeah, I should have sat over there with you guys then.
Yeah, I mean,
especially now that I know some drinks were in the mix.
And you seem kind of lonely and stuff, you know?
Really? You know, I think doing things by... I wasn't lonely at all. In fact, you got to understand something.
Uh-huh.
But first of all, thanks for the invite. I didn't think of it on that term. I was thinking more like visibility. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I live with a bunch of roommates, like 500, and... I have the best friends, and we hang out all the time. And sometimes it's like a vacation for me to go out and be by myself.
Really?
I mean, in a social situation where I can meet new people. But, like, I had an opportunity. I could have probably invited some of my roommates last night to come. But I'm like, I love them to death. But sometimes I just, you know, I need to have different experiences apart from the same group of friends.
Right.
And so sometimes when I'm out by myself, it's not a lonely thing. It feels kind of nice.
Mm.
It really does.
Yeah.
Because I have a very high octane kind of social life, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's fun for me to kind of be in a place where, you know, I'm by myself. And it's interesting when you are by yourself, the comments that you get and the people that come up to you.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't feel sad at one bit. I was having a great time.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I was having a great time.
Right.
But it's interesting. People that would not approach you otherwise feel confident to approach you, both men and women.
Yeah, because there's no gatekeeper there.
Yeah, so these women came up to me and were chatting with me and da-da-da-da-da. And then a couple dudes had to get their little licks in, right? Like, you know, and chat it up. And it was really fun, though. I love meeting new people.
Yeah.
But no, I sat there because I thought, oh, it's going to be crowded over there, and I wouldn't have been able to talk with you guys. I thought it would have been like...
Yeah, that's a sorry-ass excuse, but I'll accept it.
Well, what did you think I did it for? You think I didn't want to be seen with you or something like that?
I think so,
No, come on,
you
Sam.
Didn't want to sit with us or something. I
Whatever!
I mean, how would you take it?
I didn't know anybody there,
so I figured it was natural.
I didn't even think that far ahead with it. I just thought, it's probably crowded over there, because it was smushed against the wall, and then I thought, I'm really happy where I'm sitting.
Right.
It had nothing to do like that. I should have thought that you'd think that, though. Because you're kind of a little sensitive sometimes, so I should have thought about
it. It's not about sensitive. It's just about, you know, I didn't get it. That's all.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the invitation. And next time I'm sitting on your damn lap right next to your
wallet. There you go. I mean, you know, if it was the reverse, I would sit with you because I would think it'd be rude to go and sit by myself. But
I didn't look at it that way. I didn't see it. Well, I apologize if it was rude.
That's okay. You don't have to apologize.
Yeah, I love you guys. I appreciate the invite. I wasn't trying to be rude.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I would have sat next to you guys if I thought that.
Mm.
I was just like, no big deal. And I thought for some reason, I thought it was going to get really crowded.
Yeah.
I was waiting for it to get crowded, and I was like, I've got a good seat.
Yeah.
That never happened, though. Oh, well. Hey, you win some, you lose some, and that wasn't bad. It wasn't a bad night at all. I had a great time, and the comics were good. It was just sparse, that's all.
Mm,
Turnout was sparse.
Right. Okay, well, it's time to call our author. We have an author today who wrote a book called Pillhead, The Secret Life of a Painkiller Addict.
Hmm.
And that sounded pretty interesting.
I didn't know my mother
story.
Wrote a book. That's good to know. I didn't know it was secret either.
And I never really got the book, but thank goodness for Amazon, you know, so we can see that. So we're calling Joshua Lyon, and I think he's in New York today. So,
Josh.
Yes, Josh, good morning to you. This is Sam and Kara in L.A. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good, good. Hello. I gather you're on the East Coast right now.
I'm on the East Coast. I am. I'm in New York.
I see. Is that where you live, or are you just on a book tour, or what's going on?
Yeah, I live in New York. Are you on a cell phone by any chance? I can't seem to hear you. You keep cutting in and out.
Really? Okay, let us call you right back, okay? We're definitely not on a cell phone. We have the...
Okay.
But it's just a connection. Let me call you right back.
Okay. Thanks. Cool. Thanks. Bye.
Wow.
That was kind of funny.
Yeah? It's not funny when you're trying to get an interview going.
No, it's kind of funny. Like, I hate when people tell me, oh, you're cutting in and out. I'm like, no.
Hi.
Yes. Joshua, is this any better?
Oh, yeah. That sounds much better.
Wonderful. We just had a bad connection, I guess.
Yeah.
So you wrote the book Pillhead, The Secret Life of a Painkiller Addict, and it seemed like a pretty interesting story. I didn't get to look at the book because we never actually got it. So I went on Amazon.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I went on Amazon and learned a little bit about this. But it sounds like a fascinating story. Apparently, you were given an assignment to cover pills and addiction, painkillers, and so forth, and somehow you got into the scene as well. Why don't you go ahead and tell us briefly what happened?
Sure. This is back in 2003. I was working for a magazine, and me and all my coworkers started getting a lot of email spam in our inboxes that said, buy Vicodin online, no prescription needed. And this was happening for several weeks, and then all of a sudden I was like, wait, is this real? Is this just a scam? Like, these are controlled substances. So I pitched an article to my editors about trying to buy these medications online just to see if it was real, because I figured if it was real, then that was probably a pretty big story.
Right.
It got approved. I got a $600 drug budget to use, and within 48 hours, I had bottles of Valium, Xanax, and Vicodin waiting for me on my desk via FedEx.
Wow. So
and
you're saying...
Yeah, it was incredibly easy.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
You weren't even looking for it, and you just thought, oh, this is another Viagra penis enhancer thing, and you're like, wait a minute. Not Viagra, Valium, and so you went with it.
Yeah, it was, sorry, I think you just cut out again. Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I said, so basically you looked in your inbox and you thought this was going to be another one of those, hey, you want to enhance your penis with Viagra?
Yeah, totally, it just seemed crazy. But the fact that these were, I knew that these painkillers were controlled substances, so it was like this, and I'd also been hearing a lot, this was back in 2003, it was still relatively new as a phenomenon, but I'd definitely been hearing friends and talk about Vicodin and painkillers and saying how much they enjoyed them. There just seemed to be something in the air back then that this was bubbling around me.
Yeah. Well, what's amazing is that this thing actually turned out to be real, and you received your pills, you know?
So I received the pills, and my editors and immediately said, okay, throw them out, and I promised them that I would, and I basically lied. I was curious. I wanted to know what all the fuss was about, and I'd certainly had my fair share of drug experiences in the past, had definitely partied a lot, so I wasn't really particularly scared, I don't think, and, you know, a little maybe less so than other people might have been. So I took three of them, and unfortunately my body just responded immediately. I loved the feeling.
Yeah.
It felt euphoric. I felt like I was enveloped in this very warm, safe bubble. I had no social anxiety. Stress just melted away. What unfortunately happened is as I started depleting that first bottle in earnest, I realized pretty quickly that I started having to take more and more to chase that initial feeling.
Right. Which sounds like an addiction, a drug addiction, for sure.
And
yeah.
Is that how it works with everybody's body, that their body builds up a tolerance to it? So regardless...
Yeah. Exactly. It's called titrating to the analgesic effect. It's exactly what happens. You build up a tolerance and you need more and more of a medication in order for it to have its effect. And the worst kind of example of that was several years into my addiction. At this point, I had graduated to some harder stuff, but I really like Dilaudid and morphine, which are harder painkillers.
Yeah.
I developed appendicitis. I woke up in the middle of the night with this stabbing pain in my belly and took myself to the ER, and they told me I had appendicitis, and they said, don't worry, it's going to be a little while before we can get you into an operating room, but we'll give you morphine. And
right.
Of course my addict brain was like, oh, sweet, I'm getting morphine, like, even
right.
Through this, you know, scary hospital experience.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is they gave me the morphine, shot me up, and it did nothing for the pain. My tolerance was so high, I had blown out all my receptors that I felt high in my head. There was definitely these like kind of like white waves going on, but its intended purpose utterly failed.
Right.
So, oh, that sucks. Yeah. I don't know what appendicitis feels like, but go for it.
Yeah. So, yeah. So this is interesting. So you had been addicted before to other drugs and stuff. So you were like almost like a perfect candidate to be addicted to this as well.
Well, I wouldn't say I was ever really addicted. I think I definitely had a propensity for trying drugs. I certainly wasn't frightened of drugs back then. Like I said, I was more of like a party kid. This was my first experience, and hopefully my last and only, with any kind of a real hardcore addiction. Mm-hmm. And I think this kind of speaks to why it can become a problem. You know, you mentioned it was because you thought I was addicted to other things, that's why it was easy for me. That's not really the case. So many people are prescribed these medications for something very, very mm-hmm. legitimate, and find that they love the feeling and continue using them, and then try and find them illegally once their prescriptions run out.
Right.
You know, I have a lot of up close and personal experience with people in my life that have been addicted to various pain medications. A really good friend of mine recently just went to rehab for like the Vicodin and then Oxycontin. And my mother, you know, I don't think I ever met her not on pills. Mm-hmm. I think I came out of the womb and she was like, ha, you know. Anyway, I think she, you know, she kind of talks like Anna Nicole Smith and Ozzy Osbourne. Like, she's got that, call your mother, call me. Anyway, but it's, yeah, she's in my comedy routine. But anyway, it's interesting how people can, like, a relative of mine got sick and they put her on Oxycontin and morphine, and like that is intense. This is like one of their isn't that like a top shelf pain killer?
Oh yeah, I mean especially morphine. That's as close as you're ever going to get to pharmaceutical heroin.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like, well, if you're doing Oxycontin or morphine, which, you know, I saw a really good friend, relative go through something that she needed it. Right. I'm thinking, I can't believe I've got friends in LA that use this daily. How does that work? Doesn't your body just, I don't even know how your body can handle it.
Well, it's the weirdest thing about these particular drugs, more so I think than any other kind of drugs, and I think this is what contributes to it becoming such a huge problem. And just if I can say, just to give you an idea of just how widespread it is, mm-hmm. the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration just came out with a study 2 weeks ago that said that prescription medication abuse has grown by 400% over a 10-year period. I mean, 400% is insane. I can barely comprehend that kind of number.
Yeah.
It's massive, and I think one of the reasons there's a bunch of different reasons why they became so huge over the past 10 years. One was a general rise in overprescribing anyway, which leads to wider illegal diversion of these pills. There was also one theory is that there was a lot of increased border security post 9/11, and that created a stronger demand for drugs, you know, already existing within the U.S.
Right.
And the rise of the internet really, really helped. You know, it started to breed those early pill mills where I was getting my early pills, and it also it enabled kind of a more widespread dispersal of medication information. People just learned more about these pills and learned that they could get high from them.
Right.
And I think one of the reasons why people are able to maintain this addiction longer than others is that I was a very high functioning addict on these painkillers for a very long time, and the reason why, it's like I didn't reek of marijuana. I didn't have like coke sniffles all the time. Nobody would bat an eyelash when I pulled out my pill box and popped a pill into my mouth and swallowed.
Right.
It was just completely socially acceptable to do. And I sat there and took Dilaudid and morphine in front of my friends and family, and nobody ever had any idea.
Yeah. That's exactly.
Well, towards the end,
yeah,
they certainly did, but
yeah, that's how like a really good friend of mine, you know, that she's been going through is that, you know, she would say, oh, I have this back pain. Apparently, she was having some kind of back pain. So mm-hmm. there was, I didn't think to investigate. Well, is that legitimate back pain or
right.
Where's your prescription? People just say they have something that hurts or an ailment, and they take their pill and it was
right.
normal. And
it doesn't seem like it's illegal, you know. So
no.
It's almost like,
well,
it's fine.
Because it isn't illegal if they have a prescription.
Right.
But
exactly. And I think, you know, you kind of hit the nail on the head when you were talking about, you know, a lot of this comes to people that they're not necessarily even Some people are seeking it out and they've become addicts, but some people are legitimately getting it for legitimate reasons, but then get addicted. What do you say to that whole section of people?
Well, and this is another big problem too, is why we can't actually treat this particular drug epidemic, and it is a massive epidemic. Mm. We can't really treat it like other drug addictions because these are legitimately these are legitimate medical tools. Like, they really do. They're sometimes the only thing that's giving cancer patients and surgery patients any kind of sense of peace. They do need to remain available to the people who really need them. And it's jerks like me who are abusing it that make it a lot harder for the people that really need them to get them, because doctors are getting scared to prescribe these medications.
Right. Mm. Yeah. Wow.
Did you guys investigate this whole, like, online, how you receive the pills? I mean, I know you took it and used it for your personal use, but where did that end up going? I mean, were you guys able to prosecute? I mean, how did that even work?
Yeah, well, what happened is as soon as the DEA started getting, you know, information that these numbers of prescription painkiller abuse were rising, they definitely started cracking down fast. And one of the first places they went to was the internet and started cracking down on the pill mills. I didn't know it at the time, but that was why every time I was ordering from a website, it would suddenly disappear. But then all I had to do was type a Google search for buy Vicodin or buy Norco, and another one would pop up in its place. I think the DEA has been pretty successful about closing down most of the online ones. There's all sorts of new laws. It's incredibly hard to get any kind of a strong controlled substance online. There are certain painkillers you can still order online, but they're not particularly ones that addicts and drug seekers are interested in. Yeah. The interesting thing is I still get phone calls on my cell phone from pharmacies that apparently my phone number is just on some massive list somewhere that I used to buy from. And it's almost like they've moved over to telemarketing as opposed to
that's
internet.
So
I guess that's
crazy.
Harder to find, track down.
What about overseas or like Canada? You know, for a while people were getting, in Mexico, getting like prescription drugs.
Yeah, I definitely ordered Xanax a lot from Mexico. It would always take a while to get here. The really extremely dangerous thing about that, and especially, just in general, is that, okay, you have this presumed element of safety that you think a pill is going to be safe because you assume that a doctor somewhere down the line prescribed it to someone, and a doctor isn't going to give out anything that's harmful. The problem is when you're getting pills from these sorts of avenues, you have no idea where that pill came from, and drug manufacturers can really easily create things that look just like OxyContin or just like Xanax and distribute them as if they're a legitimate thing, and you have no idea what you're putting in your body.
Right, yeah. So how did the story end? I mean, how long were you on this before you decided to seek some help?
It was on and off about 5-6 years. The book, actually, the strange thing about the book is I actually finished the book and turned in the first draft, and then had a really, really bad relapse right after that. And so I actually went to rehab in that in-between period, and then ended up writing the ending of the book as I got out, just because I had learned a lot more. So in a lot of ways, this is still a very like immediate part of my life. But I think that's really important when it comes to writing about drugs. So many of the drug memoirs that I've read in the past, they follow a very specific formula, which is that the first half of the book is all about their crazy exploits, and then the second half is like they build up their life, get it back together, and there's a happy ending. And that's great, and I think that's awesome that people can have that to aspire to, but I think the reality is a lot harder than that. It's a constant ongoing struggle, and I really wanted to write a book that spoke to people who are still currently in the throes of their addiction and give them something to relate to and to give them some sense of hope that you can come out of it.
Wow.
Because you can.
Yeah.
Wow. Golly, that's
well,
a
so
lot.
So your book includes your own story plus the research that you did at the same time, right?
Yeah, it was, and that was kind of a bizarre thing to kind of come at this whole topic, like on the one hand through a journalist's perspective, but also through my own personal experience of going through the addiction. It's a little even nerve-wracking now to think about just how many personal details I talked about in the book, but I think the fact that I had gone through it myself really helped me to get a lot of other people to open up and talk honestly about it. You know, they didn't feel like they were talking to just, you know, an impartial reporter.
Right.
They understood that I understood what they had gone through. And then the people that I chose in the book to follow, The reason I chose those people is because they each got into their pill addiction through very, very different ways, and I wanted to show that there are so many different ways that you can fall into it. You have a bizarre experience like mine where it's a magazine article, but we also have somebody who first discovered painkillers for a legitimate medical emergency and got her first taste that way. We have another guy whose best friend was working in the local drugstore and just started stealing pills from behind the drugstore.
Wow.
That way, yeah.
Wow, that's just so interesting. I got another question for you, though, as far as like your recovery and everything, did your work find out? I mean,
The magazine that I worked for at the time folded in like the late 2000s. It was a Jane magazine, and I was really close to all my coworkers, and they were all really, really supportive once I told them like what had been going on. So yeah, they did know, and they were very supportive. And I always want to make it really clear that this was totally my irresponsibility that led to this. I wouldn't want anyone to think that it was just, you know, that the magazine had anything to do with it.
Right. Yeah. Well, definitely fascinating book. I would suggest everybody go out and get it. It's got some great reviews on Amazon. The book is Pillhead: The Secret Life of a Painkiller Addict. And Josh Lyon, thank you so much for your time.
Josh, thank you for sharing. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, you really enlightened
us. Thanks so much for having me.
And you really enlightened us on a problem that I didn't realize was this serious, but it's obviously all around us, you know. So
yeah, it really is.
All the best to you, and good luck with the book. Do you have a website as well?
I do. It's pillheadthebook.com. I blog there, and I blog on the Huffington Post.
Wonderful.
Awesome.
Okay. Josh, thank you so much. All the best to you, and good luck with your recovery.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Very nice guy. And again, you know, usually I think people that get addicted to drugs and stuff have a lot to say, you know?
Yeah.
And intense life, and, you know, I mean, it also says that he's gay and stuff, so I'm sure he's had to deal with social issues and stuff as well.
What, it says that
know?
On his website? Or?
No, on the...
on the book.
In the book, yeah.
Oh,
the
I thought
book
you were inferring says. That. Okay.
No.
You know, it's interesting. I think that addiction, from what I can see, not ever been in the throes of it, but been around it.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of look at addiction on a more broad scale, too, that I think we're all addicted to something in life. I mean, sometimes, but for many people, it's not substance. It's other things, you know, like approval or punishing or whatever. It's controlling or, you know, we have these fallbacks in life that we go to. But I think that there's a kind of rock bottom that certain people hit. So they get to see a different level than most people see.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they come out of it, it's like there's a deeper, I feel like there's a depth to them, you know, because I think a lot of people can go through life and be very complacent and maybe not do anything quote unquote messy on the outside or, you know, destroy their credit or destroy their, you know, their body. But maybe there's stuff going on in their life that they never deal with in their heart or their mind.
Right.
And they kind of are apathetic or complacent. Whereas, I'm not saying that that's any better or any worse, but I am saying that like people that actually come to terms with their demons, I guess, and they hit rock bottom, and if they come up out of that, there's a different well to that person. There's a different intensity and passion and I think grace and understanding that they have that a lot of people don't.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I really respect that. I really respect, you know, people that kind of that. Even in the struggle, I respect them, you know, but that they're grappling with it and they're coming to terms with, you know, what it is.
Have you had a period in your life where you were taking drugs of any kind?
No, I've actually never. I did one drug my whole life. I was 13 years old. I did acid.
Wow,
I did,
really?
I did
and that scared you to death, so you never wanted any other drug.
I was
drug,
13.
Huh?
I had never drank and I had never smoked weed and I still haven't smoked weed or anything else.
Never tried that, huh?
No, but
did it scare you or what?
It was actually very fun. It didn't.
Yeah?
It was like, wow, I can. But you know, well, I'm not perfect, but I do believe in God, and I mean, even like, I think when you really do believe in the Lord and that God sees everything, I mean, and I still mess up. So what I'm about to say, believe me, I still mess up. But it's like you can't escape God. So even when I was totally high, I was still praying.
Yeah.
Like I was still like, God, I know this is wrong, but in the experience of being that high, I felt like, this is such escapism. Mm-hmm. And it's so seductive because if you're really going through a hard time, and I didn't have a very stable growing up experience at all. So if you're in a very vulnerable place in your life, and then you take some pill or some hit of whatever, or you do some kind of drug, mm-hmm. you can get addicted to wanting to be gone.
Yeah.
And I really saw in that moment how it's like it's on the inside of what you're experiencing feels like Alice in Wonderland. It feels like this amazing vacation that didn't cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
Whereas on the outside, you just look like a zombie to people.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like a weird thing. Like you look like a zombie to people, and you can kill your life and your relationships and your dreams. But on the inside, you feel good. Mm. And so I was 13, and I really was able to kind of go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
This is not good.
So you didn't want it again, huh?
It wasn't that I never didn't want to do that again, because it's fun, you know, mm-hmm. but it was just I didn't do it again.
Yeah.
I just couldn't do it. I mean, also because it's not real. It's
a shortcut to happiness.
Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't last, and then it kills you. Like, it literally can kill you, you know? So, no, I was 13. That's the only thing I did. But, you know, my mom was always on pills, and I didn't, you know, when you grow up and you're around that, you don't realize that it's not normal, and you start to see things are really off.
Yeah.
Like, she was so erratic and would get mad at the weirdest things, and she was in and out of consciousness, and that was just normal to me. But I started realizing this is weird when I look at my other friends' parents.
Yeah,
and I would started to go. And then
and
I,
how did you know she was taking pills?
I mean, I knew she had pills. I mean, she had pain. She had legitimate pain pills for many different ailments she had.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if she really needed them, but I know that they were legally prescribed to her.
Right.
But she would, you know, wasn't conscious a lot. Yeah. And then I started noticing, you know, things were weird when, like, a friend of mine, her mom wouldn't let her come over to my house.
Really?
She's like, yeah, my mom won't let me spend the night. And I was like, why? She's like, well, because your mom fell asleep with her cigarette and almost lit the house on fire. Like, because my mom fell asleep with a lit cigarette. It didn't let anything
what
on fire.
What a way
but
to grow up,
she
man.
Told,
I feel bad for you.
No, I don't feel bad. Look at me. I'm happy. I'm like the happiest damn person you meet.
That's true.
But, you know, anyway, it's funny because her mom was like, yeah, I can't come over and spend the night because your mom fell asleep with a cigarette. But I knew that's when I called my dad. I made my mom call my dad, and I was like, look, I got to go live with my dad. And I didn't know my dad, really. I'd just seen him, you know, I knew him when I was really a little kid, but I didn't really know him. I just knew, and I think it was God, because, you know, kids don't make hard decisions. Kids don't go, you know, I don't want to do this, but I'm going to do it because it's good.
Right.
Like, kids don't have that capability. So there's no, because I knew I didn't want to leave my mom. I love my mom. I didn't want to move out. I didn't want to be away from her. But I knew something instinctually was like a survival, a need to survive. Like, I knew that I was going to be in a really bad place if I lived with her.
Right.
And how do 8-year-olds know that? They don't know that. Like, a 7-8-year-old doesn't have the capability. But I just knew I needed to get out. And I think that that was really the Lord, you know, orchestrating that. So then my dad came and then we went to go live with my dad.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't like living with him. I didn't like it, but I just knew I couldn't live with my mom.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow, what a terrible thing to go through.
Well, I mean, I had some fun time, too. It wasn't like a horror. I'm just telling
you. Yeah, but, you know, I mean, your parents are like your support system and stuff.
Well.
And, you know, you realize that you can't lean on them. It's terrible.
But I'm very interesting. Look how amazing and interesting my life is. Hey. No, it's not like, I mean, I here's the thing. Everybody's got a sad story that can break your heart. And
that's true.
You know what? You think you've got it crazy. I've talked to people that have had it a million times worse. I was never physically abused. I was never, you know, I never, like, never got to not eat. You know what I mean? There's a lot of things that I know people went through that I didn't. So it just depends on who you're comparing it to.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
And I do believe that. I mean, I have a lot of great stand-up material because of it. I mean, literally. And I think it gives people character, and they value things differently, and it's colorful, and, you know, there's just... So, but I mean, I also know a lot of people that, you know, have had a pretty easy road growing up, and some of them have problems, and some of them are great. I mean, you know what I mean? It's kind of... Some of them are really apathetic and really normal, but, like, not excited about life, and some people are totally excited about life. You know, it's just,
it has to do with your temperament and, you know, disposition in life and so forth. You know, for some people, I think it comes easier, you know, to be in a good mood and happy and
probably,
you know, because I mean, despite all the things that happen to you in your life, you know, you still manage to be happy and cheerful and, you know.
Well, I really don't have much to answer. I really think that's a blessing from God. I really think God just...
Hallelujah.
You know, hallelujah, yeah. I think what it does is, like, you know, going back to what you're saying about the intensity with people that have been addicts, I think that you can kind of, if people pull out of something, they can kind of see things differently, and they mm-hmm. value the littler things, and it makes them happy.
Right.
Like, I'm not happy because I have $1 million into my bank account, because you know that ain't true, okay? and I'm not happy because, you know, I've got the newest this or the this or that. I get happy because I'm like, oh man, it's sunny outside, and then I'm thinking about, oh, I'm gonna go on a run, or oh, I'm gonna hang out with my friends, or you know, oh man, I'm gonna put on a cute outfit later, or you know, oh, I just had a great time laughing with so and so. I mean, tiny things make me really happy.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
So you're fortunate in that way.
Gift.
You know,
I think it's a gift.
It is, because it comes easier for you. You know.
But I mean, I think it's something you have to work at too. I mean, I definitely think it's a blessing when you can appreciate what you have and see.
But do you have to work at
yeah,
it?
Yeah, there's times like there's definitely days where all I see is the problem. Mm-hmm. All I see is I get overwhelmed and I don't know how to get from point A to point B. Like, I know that I need to be here and I don't know what to do, or I don't feel like I have the resources, or I don't have the blueprint. I don't figure it out, and I feel very overwhelmed. And what happens is you can feel so overwhelmed that you get paralyzed. You don't know what, so you don't do anything, and it makes it worse.
Right.
And, or, you start wanting to give up.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And, I just feel like in those times I have to kind of, you know, take it down to its smallest denominator and go, okay, why am I so stressed out, or why do I feel so despairing right now?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then go, okay, well, what can I control? And yeah. then I go, okay, well, some of this I just have to give to God. I have to go, you know what? I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
I can't do this.
Yeah.
You know?
See, one thing they can't take away from you ever is the freedom to decide how you view the situations, you know, mm-hmm. how you view what happens to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's a gift right there, you know, mm-hmm. because you can decide whether you're going to be down or whether you're going to feel okay about what is happening to you. Because, mm-hmm. like you said, everybody's got a story. Everybody's got problems.
Hey, we're all imperfect. We were all raised by imperfect people in an imperfect world. So everybody's going to be jacked up in some way.
Right.
I think that's where God comes in. I think that we're all searching for identity and purpose in this life and, mm-hmm. and passion. And I think ultimately... anything short of really God, I think ultimately is just, it's going to leave you feeling, you know, empty. Mm. And I think that that's, for me, I mean, you know, even like in Ecclesiastes, the Bible talks about there are rich people in life that will never be able to enjoy their wealth.
Mm.
And it's a blessing to be able to enjoy your wealth.
Right.
And I thought about that. I'm like, you know, uh-huh. that's so true. I mean, even if you're, whether you got 10 bucks or $1 million or whatever, being able to enjoy that 10 bucks or that $1 million, and not just the bucks, but what the experience it brings and the
right.
and what you can get
right.
out of it
yeah.
and being grateful. I mean, sometimes people that have a lot of wealth, and I'm not against wealth, I'm not bashing wealth or rich people, I'm not, but sometimes what can happen is people then become worried about their wealth all the time and trying mm. to manage their wealth. And I'm like, It's like the thing that you have that should be fun and great and can bless people and you can have great things now is a burden, you know, and now it's like, are you even happy? Like, is this really bringing you happiness?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Whereas you can be like, woohoo, I got $20. Let's go.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
I just think it is. It's perspective, and it's like God giving you an ability to see in that perspective.
Yeah.
On, you know,
see, that's the thing. I think on the basic level, when God created all this, it was not meant to be that if we have money, we're happy. You know,
yeah,
there's other
yeah.
things that have to be, you know, that
yeah.
that take place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, yeah, like you said, I mean, many rich people are not happy at all. And then, you know, you see a lot of poor people that are fine with what they have, you know.
And then there are rich people that are happy, too. I mean, there's,
yeah.
you know, I mean, I'm just saying it's. The happiness can't be solely dependent on what you have. It's really
right.
a heart condition and what you see and what you value. I mean, you know, there's people that have money that it's never going to be enough.
Right.
They have to keep acquiring and acquiring.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you can't take it with you. You're going to die and, you know,
yeah.
that's it.
That's why you got to be grateful when you're healthy, you know, when you have the basic stuff that you
mm-hmm.
need. And everything else is an icing on the cake, you know,
yeah,
the cherry.
I mean, Like when I went and had Pinkberry yesterday.
Uh-huh.
I enjoyed that. I just ate it up. This with my roommate Sarah. We had some good chats.
Uh-huh.
It's so beautiful outside. We walked around
for a bit.
Yeah,
it was beautiful last night, yeah.
We walked around for a bit and had the Pinkberry and, you know. It's just fun. You know, and people are important. I mean, people, it's like spending time with people. And sometimes I'll be really, really broke. Mm-hmm. And we'll have people over and I'm like, gosh, I can't really afford to like show up. I can't really afford to like feed everybody.
Right.
You know, I'll start to go through.
You'd like to be the hostess, but you don't have the mostest.
Yeah. I'll kind of go, oh man, I really want to have friends over, but I just, you know, money wise, this, and this. But needless to say, we always have people over. People always bring something and there's always leftovers. Yeah. And I think that that's just God's grace. You know, the Bible talks about, you know, the feeding of the 5,000 and two fish and two loaves. And I think about that because a lot of times when people just come together, you know, when you put people above your fear and you put people above your whatever and you really connect with people.
Right.
It's like God always provides through that. Like somebody will, a lot of people bring wine. We always like stash up and have like bottles of wine left.
Right.
We have tons of little treats, you know. Somebody will, some people will bring all they have and some people will bring more than they they'll overbring. And some people won't bring anything because they can't afford it.
Right.
And it's just the body, I believe it's the body of Christ. I believe that's how the church should work. And I mean, the church isn't the people of God, you know, like you come together and, you know, you make up for the, everybody just brings out of their heart what they have and then everybody's provided for.
Right.
Isn't that sweet?
Yeah.
It always amazes me. It always amazes me because sometimes I'll be so hey, I have this one story though. This one time, my really good friends, it was their, they had a dual birthday, a husband and wife. And I had said I was going to do the dessert, these cupcakes. And I was going to make these cupcakes. I said yes. And then I got really broke. And it was like a really nice party. And I was like, what the hell am I going to do? What am I going to do? And I was like so stressed. And I was like, damn. You know, this is life of an actor, right? And anyway, so I literally had like $4, like $4. Anyway, I went and I went to the dollar store and I got the mix and the icing. And then I like went home and I added all this shit to it to make it like gourmet-ish.
Uh-huh.
So like I like whipped the icing up with different cream cheese and then I got like all these different additives and, you know, different flavorings and basically took the mix and souped it up so it was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And made it, put it on a really pretty plate and decorated and everything. And then anyway, I brought it to the party and they were like, not even one was left. And everybody was like, you made the best cupcakes ever. Da-da-da-da. And I was like, $4, praise the Lord. But I just feel like, you know, God is so good.
Praise the Lord. Hallelujah.
I just feel like God is so good and he always just covers our ass, you know.
Yeah.
He's like, I gotcha. Don't worry.
So you're talking about religion. I wanted to make an announcement that best-selling author Anne Rice is going to be on the station on Friday on Tony Sweet's show at 6 o'clock p.m. Pacific time. And she's going to be talking about her departure from Christianity. She said that she's had enough of anti-gay, anti-feminism, and, you know, especially since her son is gay. We did, if you remember, we had Christopher Rice in the studio, and who is gay, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would imagine that she finds it hard to resolve her, you know, her belief, her faith, with those sort of things where the, you know, intolerance from the church.
Mm.
So, and this is like at the top of the news, you know, and she chose us to air some of her opinions and stories and stuff. So I highly recommend you guys tune in. That's Friday again on Tony Sweet's show. And I think that's it for today. Do you have anything to add?
Everybody, just have a wonderful day. God loves you regardless of where you are and what you have and what you don't have.
Right.
Be blessed and just enjoy life.
Enjoy life to its fullest.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can, find someone that will give you cleavage every morning and will make
whatever.
Your day. Will make your day.
Anyway, God loves you. Let's end on that note. Don't end on cleavage note.
Yes, okay. We won't let... we started
you.
On cleavage note. We
whatever,
might as well,
no.
Right? All right, everyone. Thank you all for joining us. We'll be back here tomorrow.
been listening to Sam and Kara in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time and originates from the Los Angeles Talk Radio studios. For questions regarding the show or to learn more about sponsorship opportunities, please direct all correspondents to info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Kara in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.